for retirement is not always top of mind for younger workers, but getting started early can make those later years so much more relaxing and fun. This week, Techonomics host Jason Middleton speaks with a wealth manager and retirement planner who himself is not only under 40, but he's been awarded for his millennial approach to investing.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening, of course. Some recent data show there is some progress in communicating to millennials just how important saving for retirement really is. After all, millennials are now the majority age group in the American labor force. Overall, the American workforce is getting better about financial planning, too. 23% of working Americans increased their retirement savings contributions over the past year. That's the highest reading in 6 years. More good news, 30% of younger millennial workers age 18 to 26 increased their retirement savings contributions this year compared to last year. That's the highest of any age group. This is all according to new data from Bankrate.com. Planning for the future, sometimes using fifth grade math and a level head. That conversation starts now.
Douglas Bonaparte, president of Bonafide Wealth and co-author of The Millennial Money Fix.
Yeah, you got a recent accolade for a top 40 under 40, didn't you?
Yeah, that was last year. That was really cool, and that was given by Investment News. I was very humbled by that. They got us all together from all the previous classes this year and did a think tank, and that was very exciting to hear, you know, what everybody was thinking about, you know, our industry. I guess if you're not in our industry, it's probably very boring.
Well, that's what we're trying to solve, right? Because what's on your mind is your new book, obviously. And the topic is, of course, The Millennial Money Fix, what you need to know about budgeting, debt, and finding financial freedom. But obviously, the focus here is on millennials. And obviously, I wanted to mention your bona fides because there's a lot of value in this book. But I have to go to one thing you have in your foreword, or maybe it's your first chapter. Back in 2014, a survey by the American College of Financial Services showed that only 20% of retirement age adults received a passing score when talking about their financial planning. And I'm wondering, like, are you trying to nip this problem in the bud? Because 20% is a failing rate, obviously.
Yeah, so we see that really no generation, I know the book's millennial focus, but really no generation has it together when it comes to financial education. And I think we'll have to do a lot more than just put out great content like this to solve the problem. I've talked to a lot of people, how do we do that? You know, I think it needs to be a lot younger, as, you know, brought to the households, brought to the education systems before high school. But yeah, no one's really good at financial education. It's just that for millennials, the economic environment, it's really caught up to them and has created some very interesting challenges.
Before we get into the meat of the book, but in a macro kind of way, how did you have to hone this book's attention on this generation? How does it differ from other money advice, I guess I'm asking?
Sure. So Heather and I have lived the challenges, and Heather's my wife and co-author. We've lived the challenges that a lot of people in the generation are facing, primarily what to do with student loan debt, from paying for very expensive college educations, which we are told is a right and not a privilege, and we need that to compete out in the world. So I think by offering that perspective, we're really going to resonate better when we give the financial advice component. But you'll see when you read the book, we do a good job of putting our stories in there, hopefully some laughs as well.
I think one thing that is, I believe, chapter 4, which was resonated with me because I am in my 40s and just recently was able to get rid of my student debt after after a few years of really unfortunate decision making and defaulting. But nonetheless, I got it all paid off and I'm cool with the government. But your wife went through something in chapter 4. Could you relate that story as it relates to others?
Absolutely. So we're talking about paying back that debt and really getting your head around some of the emotional aspects. So you might have made a bad decision, and only hindsight will tell you that. But for Heather, having taken out $200,000 in debt, you can imagine the emotional toll it took on her and even on us in terms of how are we going to go about achieving the great things in life that we want to accomplish. And a lot of that was first realizing that this debt figure for her, for many people who are saddled with it, that it's just a number. And there are ways that you can approach your student loan debt and continue to achieve the goals. It doesn't have to be an all or none type proposition, but it first requires you to get your head in a certain space. And then we'll give you the tools about how to get organized and think about the loans themselves so that you can get on the pathway to putting that plan together and ultimately paying them off.
Within the last couple of years, millennials have become the majority of the labor force, right? But I want to circle back real quick on something that you touched on in the book as well, kind of right there in your answer. It's the real return on investment of a pricey education. Your wife, $200K in debt for that. Is there a way that you can calculate, you know, risk versus reward when it comes to that kind of a cost?
You know, it's funny you say that. I just put an article together for a friend of mine who wanted to know, is there actually a quick calculation you can do to figure out if, you know, getting that degree is worth it? The book goes into that a little bit, but also, you know, a little bit more detailed. But ultimately, you have to know what it is you want for yourself. We strongly believe that taking out tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt to go figure out what it is you want to do is a terrible idea, right? Mm-hmm. You have other choices. Like, you can actually go work for like a couple of years and figure it out. You'll make money. Right. You can volunteer your time. You can actually just don't go put yourself in a pretty prickly financial situation. But if you really want to put it together, there's a little, you know, fifth grade math you can do to figure that out. You can figure out how much you're going to borrow for that education. You can figure out how much you're going to have to pay back every month. Where is that job? In what city? How much does it pay? Go get those numbers and just start to subtract out from, okay, I'm going to make this much. Rent is this. Here's an assumption for taxes. Here's what my student loan payment is. Take those things out. And what you're left with is a number that says, can I afford to be comfortable on this and grow personally and professionally? And when that equation breaks down and you realize, oh my God, you know, I got to live on $400 a month in New York City or in San Francisco,
right?
That's not going to work. And that's really basic thinking and math that can be applied to figure it out. Nobody's doing it.
You're a prolific author, award-winning financial advisor. You also sit on panels, like you mentioned earlier, and I'm wondering from the audience or from other sources, really, what kind of questions do you get from different age groups? And specifically, let's start with millennials. Are you hearing something different from that generation as you would others?
I think millennials are looking to figure out how to balance multiple goals. So when I do speaking engagements and I talk to that demographic, they're really trying to figure out, well, how do I also buy a house or start a family and live within my student loan debt? Now, that might not be necessarily a new thing, dealing with multiple goals, but when you throw in the student loan debt component and you see how big of an expense that is for a lot of people, that's what makes it very different. So you have maybe $500 a month, you know, vacuum pulling money out of your pocket that would normally go towards things that other generations were also going towards: homes, families, starting businesses. And that right there is what I'm concerned with. Are we pushing the economy out? Are we doing harm to it by really pushing these things off and delaying them? Now, you could say we might live longer, but that's perhaps a different conversation.
Playing off of the living longer, playing off of the push them out a little bit to make that decision, do you have a gospel you'd like to preach when it comes to compound interest?
Sure. You start earlier, you get rewarded more over time. But I want people to understand first what that concept is, right? So opportunity cost, knowing that your dollar today is worth more than your dollar tomorrow. That's a very important thing to know, not just with how it is you're going to go about managing money, particularly with investments, right? But really kind of how you can live your life and maximize time and be productive. So I do like that, you know, and it's a core concept to what we talk about, specifically in the investment chapter.
Doug, did I miss anything that you wanted to talk about?
I thought you hit on some of the things that I would hope people, you know, would want to talk to me about. It was good.
All right, Doug, have a great weekend and thank you again.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was Doug Bonaparte. He's co-author of The Millennial Money Fix, What You Need to Know About Budgeting, Debt, and Finding Financial Freedom. Doug wrote The Millennial Money Fix with his co-author and wife, Heather J. Bonaparte. She's his marketing manager and counsel. Heather was also $200,000 in student debt. So if she was the millennial problem, this book was her fix. For more information, check out the story that goes with this week's show. Head over to KGORadio.com/Techonomics and just click in. Coming up after the break, we get back under the hood on the societal challenges that come with advancing artificial intelligence. We're going to speak again with Vivek Wadhwa. If you've ever said, what do you do for a living at a party, you may want to stay tuned because that question could be moot soon. That's next. So please come on back. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.